Good morning to you. Give you warmest greetings from the brothers and sisters of yours in Enid, Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. We pray for you. We are grateful for you. And this morning, it's my privilege to be with you and to bring you greetings from the saints. And as I'm sure we'll talk later over lunch, to even let you know how we're doing there. And you can let us know how you're doing and how we can be praying for you. In addition to these warm greetings, I bring an exciting text. Yes, I have been preaching through Nehemiah, and there's one thing I realized about Nehemiah as I've reached chapter 11 in Enid. Nehemiah likes his Hebrew names. You will get a good dose of Hebrew names this morning. But don't worry, he has two chapters worse than this. Nehemiah chapter 11. Nehemiah chapter 11. We'll read the whole chapter together, verses 1 through 36. Rather, I will read it and you will listen. Nehemiah 11, 1 through 36. Hear now the word of the Lord. Now the leaders of the people lived in Jerusalem, and the rest of the people cast lots to bring one out of 10 to live in Jerusalem, the holy city. Well, 9 out of 10 remained in the other towns. And the people blessed all the men who willingly offered to live in Jerusalem. These are the chiefs of the province who lived in Jerusalem. But in the towns of Judah, everyone lived on his property in their towns. Israel, the priests, the Levites, the temple servants, and the descendants of Solomon's servants. And in Jerusalem lived certain of the sons of Judah and the sons of Benjamin. Of the sons of Judah, Athaiah, the son of Uzziah, son of Zechariah, son of Amariah, son of Shephatiah, son of Mahalel, son of the sons of Perez. Maaseiah, the son of Baruch, son of Kol Hoseh, son of Haziah, son of Adiah, son of Joirib, son of Zechariah, son of the Shelonite. Of the sons of Perez who lived in Jerusalem were 468 valiant men. Of these are the sons of Benjamin, Salu, the son of Meshulam, the son of Joed, son of Padiah, son of Koliah, son of Maaseiah, son of Ithiel, son of Jeshaiah, and his brothers, men of valor, 928. Joel, the son of Zikri, was their overseer, and Judah, the son of Hasanuah, was second over the city. Of the priests, Jediah, the son of Joirib, Jakin, Sarai, the son of Hilkiah, son of Meshulam, son of Zadok, son of Merioth, son of Ahitub, ruler of the house of God. And their brothers who did the work of the house, 822. And Adiah, the son of Jerom, son of Peliah, son of MZ, son of Zechariah, son of Pashur, son of Melchizah, and his brothers, heads of fathers' houses, 242. Amashasai, son of Azarel, son of Hazai, son of Mishalamoth, son of Emir. And their brothers, mighty men of valor, 128. Their overseer was Zabdiel, the son of Hegedolim. And of the Levites, Shemaiah, the son of Hashub, son of Azricam, son of Hashabiah, son of Buni. And Shebathai and Jozabad of the chiefs of the Levites, who were over the outside work of the house of God. And Mattaniah, the son of Micah, son of Zabdi, son of Asaph, who was the leader of the praise, who gave thanks. Bakbukiah, the second among his brothers, and Abda, the son of Shemua, son of Galel, son of Jeduthun. All the Levites in the holy city were 284. The gatekeepers, Akub, Talmon, and their brothers, who kept watch at the gates, were 172. And the rest of Israel and of the priests and the Levites were in all the towns of Judah, everyone in his inheritance. But the temple servants lived on Ophel, and Ziha and Gishpa were over the temple servants. The overseer of the Levites in Jerusalem was Uzi, the son of Bani, son of Hashabiah, son of Mattaniah, son of Micah, son of the sons of Asaph, the singers, over the work of the house of God. For there was a command from the king concerning them, and a fixed provision for the singers is every day required. And Pethahiah, the son of Meshezabel, of the sons of Zerah, the son of Judah, was at the king's side in all matters concerning the people. And as for the villages, with their fields, some of the people of Judah lived in Kiriath Arba and its villages, and in Dibon and its villages, and Jekab Zeel and its villages, in Jeshua, and in Molada, and Beth Pellet. In Hazar Shual, in Beersheba, and its villages. In Ziklag, in Mekonah, and in its villages. In Enrin, Rimmon, and in Zora. In Jarmuth, Zenoa, Adullam, and their villages. Lachish and its fields, Azekah and its villages. So they camped from Beersheba to the Valley of Hinnom. The people of Benjamin also lived from Geba onward, at Michmash, Aijah, Bethel, and its villages. Anathoth, Nob, Ananiah, Hazor, Ramah, Gittim, Hadid, Zeboim, Nabalat, Lod, Ono, the Valley of the Craftsmen. And certain divisions of the Levites in Judah were assigned to Benjamin. Most English speakers come to this chapter and go, "What do you do with that?" Well, let's find out. And let's start with a picture. A picture from my own experience. In a previous life, when I was significantly younger, I worked for a plumber. I was a plumber's helper. Not a unclog things plumber. Put pipes where there are no pipes, plumber. We did new construction. They would throw concrete slabs on the ground, stick walls up, and we would go in and stick pipes in there. We worked with clean plumbing. And the funny thing is all of our plumbing jobs happened to be in this really rural, agrarian district, Sullivan County, New York. And there's this marvel where, how did you get work building houses in rural upstate New York? Well, we were only about an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours from New York City. And what we were building were vacation homes for the wealthy of New York City. These are homes that far exceeded, their garage was the size of my childhood home. These were massive mansions that we were building, making good money as plumbers. And I would marvel at these million-dollar homes that were for the weekend. They would drive up late on Friday night after work. They would spend Saturday and Sunday in their home. And Sunday night, they would drive back to work. This? Hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions, for a weekend home? Is that the price that was paid for a weekend home? Some of you are starting to suspect where I'm going with this. The church, for many Christians, is a weekend home. We just visit it. It's a Sunday morning thing. And that's our attitude. That's our thoughts and our passions. But I submit to you this morning that what you'll find in Nehemiah 11 is that the price Jesus Christ paid for His church is one that goes far beyond a weekend home. Given the price that was paid, He meant to live in it, to dwell in it. And He means for you to do the same. This is the truth of God in Nehemiah 11. The church is God's house. You, the church, this is where God dwells. You are His house. Live in your church. You of all people will know, a church is not a building. It is the people. Live with your people. Live like a family. Live in your church. This is the truth of God in Nehemiah 11. That the church is God's house. And He wants you to live in it. Let's look at the text together. Well, let's begin with the first three verses. These three verses set as a cornerstone the entire text. They fix for us the story. It's the background. In verse 1, it says that the leaders of the people lived in Jerusalem. Down in verse 3, it records the categories, the list of who these leaders are. The leaders are called Israel, that is common people, leaders from among the common people. Then it says the priests, the Levites, the temple servants. Those who serve at the temple, those who do the work of the temple. As well as descendants of Solomon's servants. Those who have administrative or royal responsibilities. So the first step in our story is there are leaders. prominent figures, important people to the nation of Israel, to the church itself, who live in Jerusalem. But Nehemiah knows it's not enough. He knows that the leaders who already live in Jerusalem are not enough. Jerusalem must have more. There must be more who dwell. So he comes up with a plan. And this is a genius scheme. First, he says, we must have more people come into Jerusalem, and this is how many more people we will come. 1 out of 10. 9 will remain in their homes and their villages, but 1 out of 10 will move to Jerusalem and support the work of the church. Why does he choose 1 out of 10? Now, perhaps he did involve census data. And perhaps he did studies of the demographic region, and perhaps he Googled lots of information about the area, and found out that 1 out of 10 is the number they need to execute this business model. I doubt it. Why does he say 1 out of 10? Who is the first one to create that ratio? God. That's the tithe. 1 out of 10. Nehemiah comes and he says, we need more people to live in Jerusalem. As a matter of fact, we need a tithe. I'm going to take a tithe, 1/10 of the entire nation. And that 1/10, that tithe, will come and live in Jerusalem. Why does he pick a tithe? Because nobody can pick a fight with him. He can defend himself. It's not my fault. God picked the number. It's God's number. I'm not taking any more of your people than God already asked for. He's already said he wants 1/10 of everything you have. I'm just doing what God's doing. I'm taking 1/10. Nehemiah's point is, this is God's call, not mine. When I say, come, live in Jerusalem, come, give yourself to the work of the church, it's not Nehemiah. It's God speaking. That's the point of 1 out of 10. God picked this number. But Nehemiah goes a step further and says, not only will we just do the tithe, God's ordained number and ratio, but we'll do it by casting lots. Now, for most of us in the West, in America, this casting lots thing is not kosher. We're not too happy with this. This is throwing dice. This is going to a casino. This, we attribute to randomness. We say, what is he doing? Leaving it up to chance? How Calvinistic is that? If you read in the law, there's a specific reason given for casting lots. God actually commanded Old Testament Israel to cast lots at certain points in time. And God always has this little phrase that he attaches. When you cannot make a decision for yourself, cast lots so that God may make the decision for you. Casting lots was not leaving things to random chance. They were good Calvinists. They believed that casting lots turned things over to the sovereignty of God. Nehemiah is saying, I want a tithe of God's people. This is God's number. And I want that tithe to be chosen by the casting of lots. God hand-picked you. That's the message. Nehemiah needs help. He knows that the leaders who live in Jerusalem are not enough to do the work of the church. And so he says, I need help. But the way he gets help is by saying, and God has chosen you, and you, and you, and you. God handpicked you to do the work of the church in Jerusalem. You guys know where I'm going with this? First application. If you are sitting in a brown chair this morning, God picked you. He picked you to do the work of the church in Stillwater. You are the tithe out of the nation. You are the ones for whom He has cast the lot and said, Stillwater is your city. Do the work of my church here. Love the people in Stillwater. Do the work of my church. I have called you. This is a beautiful thing for a pastor. It means I can stand up here and preach to you. Dear saints, do the work of Jesus Christ. And it's not me talking. God has chosen you. God has put you here. Do you know that every neighbor who lives next to you was picked by Jesus? Hand picked? Do you know the guy in the cubicle next to you who has the office down the hallway from you was hand-picked by Jesus for you? Do you know that every kid that you have in your house was hand-picked by Jesus for you? And Jesus doesn't make mistakes. He has picked you. That's Nehemiah's point. That's my point this morning. God picked you to live in this church, to love this church, to live and love in this city. It's His call. It's His command to you. But let's move on and see what Nehemiah does next, having fastened this cornerstone. Is he now examines the leaders who are already in Jerusalem. Not the direction I would have thought he would go. But the next step he takes is, who are the leaders already in Jerusalem? The first ones are what he has termed Israel. Those from among the people. In verse 4, he calls them the sons of Judah and the sons of Benjamin. I will not plow my way through their names again. I've done it once. But their names are listed here for a reason. A great reason. He is actually tracing out. Notice this. It's not a collection of families. It's one family. Of the sons of Judah, there is this family stretching back to Perez. Now, who's Perez? Well, Perez is the son of Judah. Oh, well, that makes sense. So the line going back to Judah has come back to Jerusalem. But why does he stop at Perez? Why does he even mention Perez? Okay, Perez is the son of Judah. But who is Perez's mother? This is not child friendly. It's Tamar, Judah's daughter-in-law, who dresses massively inappropriately, hangs out on the side of a street, and seduces her father-in-law. This is the child, Perez. These are the leaders of God's people. They don't come from good stock. There is sin born through each generation of this line. This is not a healthy genealogy. Nehemiah writes out the list, and this is not a list to be proud of. This is not something to boast in. These are the sons of Judah, and Nehemiah says, and they are sinful to a man. And they are wretched to a man. He lists them out, but they are in Jerusalem for a specific purpose. These sinful sons of Judah live in Jerusalem because they have a passion for the church. In verse 6, it says, all the sons of Perez were 468 valiant men. That phrase will come back to us again and again. Valiant men. It has the idea of being well off. We might even think of it in an economic way. They are flush with money. But it also means flush with supplies. That is, weapons. It's the idea of being like a samurai or a knight of the medieval ages. They are valiant men. That is, they are men who are wealthy enough to own their own weapons. They are wealthy enough to own their own armors. And it means they know how to use them. This is a militia. This is the National Guard. Why are they living in Jerusalem? For the defense of the city. It so is true then for the sons of Benjamin. You go through the sons of Benjamin, and in verse 8 you'll see that they are the men of valor. Our same phrase. Men who have weapons and men who know how to use them. They have their overseer, their general, their captain, Joel, the son of Zichri. They have their second in command, their lieutenant, Judah, the son of Hasanua. There is the sons of Benjamin and Judah who live in Jerusalem, and the reason they're there is to defend the city, to guard and protect her. There is this motive to these leaders, which is the security and well-being of the church. The purity and the safety of God's people is their passion. So too, if you are to live in Jerusalem, if you are to live in the city of God and dwell amidst His people, should you not have a passion for the purity and the safety of God's sheep? Do you not have elders who were raised up for this exact purpose? To beat off wolves. To fight for the sheep in the church. But so too, we as fathers, do we not exist to fight wolves who come to our doors? Is there not a position in the church where we should have a heart, not just leaders, but everyone, for the purity and the safety of our saints? Are we concerned for the souls of our brothers and sisters enough to say, don't watch that and don't go there? Guard your heart. Do we speak to one another like this and say, I care for your soul, please guard it. Guard it well. When we speak to one another, are we on guard, well armed with the word of Christ to see error and to speak against it? Is there this passion beating in our chest? There ought to be, dear saints, to live among each other, to live with each other for the defense of each other, for the security of each other. I am terrified of sin in the souls of my children, so I live with them and guard them. We should be terrified over the fact that sin creeps into the souls of our brothers and sisters. And we should live near them and be with them and praying for them and calling them and emailing them and texting them and all that other crazy, what is it, Twitter and Facebook. Whatever it takes to guard the soul of our brothers and sisters. We are to be a militia for each other, living near and fighting for each other's well-being. But so too, there are leaders there who aren't there for defense, who aren't there to fight for the purity of the church. Though there are some for that, there are some also for the worship of God. They live in Jerusalem to perfect and lead the worship of God. In verse 10, they're listed out as the priests. In verse 11, he is the ruler over the house of God. This is a phrase specific to the high priest. So this is specifically the high priest. Makes sense, he would live in Jerusalem. He lives in Jerusalem, the high priest. But so too his brothers, who do the work of the house. That is, cutting animals' throats and burning them on the altar. That is, laying out the showbread each morning. That is, trimming the wicks in the lamps to make them burn all day and all night. To keep the incense piles burning so that the smoke rises to the heavens. These are the ones who do the work of the temple, who polish the little gold and the bronze lavier to make it shine and gleam as if this is the house of God. They are the ones who do the work of the house of God. They are the ones who stand up and they teach and they preach. They are the ones who stand up and who pray and who lead in singing. They are the ones who serve the worship of God. They do the work of His house. And they are to gather together and numbered here. But so too in verse 14, these priests are mighty men of valor. Get that. Mighty men of valor. These are pastors and elders who carry swords. Yeah. Like samurai daggers under my jacket. These guys are mighty men of valor. They're not just men of valor. They are mighty men of valor. They have weapons and they worship God and they lead in the worship of God well armed. They have a passion for the purity and the safety, not just of the people. That's what the sons of Judah and Benjamin do. But for the purity and the safety of the church, of the worship of God. That our songs would be pure and our hearts would be pure. That the word read, preached, sung, that the people of God would be drenched in the words of God all the hour long. They have this passion for the worship of God. So too with the Levites then in verse 15. The Levites are listed off and they do in verse 16 the outside work of the house of God. Now this is easily sprung to in our minds. We would picture this as they do the outside work of the church. They mow the lawn. They trim the hedges. They do the outside work. They pave the parking lot. That's not what it means. They do the outside work as in they don't offer the sacrifices. They don't lift up the incense or sprinkle the blood. But they do the work of mercy. They feed the hungry. They clothe the poor. They visit the sick. They do the outside work of the church. There are those who live in Jerusalem to lead the worship when the church gathers. But there are those in Jerusalem who scatter with the church to love and to show compassion, to care for those who are outside the church. Those who do not assemble with the saints. They too live in Jerusalem. Are you getting the ongoing picture here? There are those who live in Jerusalem whose commitment all day long is the church. Why are they there? Because they care about her purity and her safety, of her people and their souls. There are those who live in Jerusalem who are committed to the 24/7 work of the church. Why are they there? Because they're worried about the assembly, the worship of God. There are those who live, who eat, drink, and think the church. Why are they there? Why are they doing that? Because they're worried about the mercy ministry, the compassion and the care of the poor. This is why they live in the holy city of God. So too then, verse 19, the gatekeepers. The gatekeepers live in the city. They keep watch, in verse 19, over the gates. The rest of Israel, verse 20, they're out in their towns. They're on their inheritance. We'll come back to that in a second. But these ones stand at the gates that are ready. Behind them on the Ophel, that's the hill below the temple complex, the temple servants live with Ziha and Gishpa over them, their overseers. They live there at the gates, guarding, keeping wolves from coming in, and letting sheep pass through safely. They are the gatekeepers. We might call them our greeters, who hand out bulletins and smile and shake hands. Welcome people. We might call them any number of different things. The point is that they welcome people. They love and embrace people. But so too they keep wolves at bay. They guard and watch over the people. From the priests, the Levites, to the gatekeepers, to the temple servants, there are those who live in Jerusalem for one purpose. The worship of God. The service of God in mercy ministry. The safety and security of the church. They are giving themselves to this work so energetically and so passionately. And how about us? How about us? Do we even think Monday through Saturday about the worship of God? Does it even cross our minds that in 6 days we'll be back here? Does it ever occur to us that there is work that must be done Monday through Saturday for this hour to happen? And not just by me and Bruce. There is a week-long work called worship. And the people of God are to give themselves to this work. So too, the Levites, the mercy ministry. They go hungry, these poor people, 7 days a week. It is a constant labor to love the poor and the needy. It is a constant labor, by the way, not just to hand them food, but to work hard and earn enough money to be able to care for the poor. That's part of the picture too. To be diligent in our labors and in our work so that we have something to share. To be diligent in our homes and managing our finances. It is a 24/7 work. These people live in the city of God. And they do its work. They are motivated to protect the souls of the people. They are motivated to serve the worship of God. They are motivated to care and love for the poor and needy. They are motivated to guard and keep the gates of the church. They are motivated to serve the people of God. And then again, one last one, verse 22, and following the overseers of the Levites is Uzzi the son of Bani. Now the Levites' overseer has already been recorded. So this is a second overseer. And he is an overseer not of the work of the Levites, but of a specific thing associated with the Levites. Notice this, that Uzzi descends from his line. Notice his family line here. He is Uzzi the son of Bani, the son of Hashabiah, son of Mattaniah, son of Micah, sons of Asaph, of the temple singers. These are a group of Levites, these sons of Asaph, whose job it is to sing 24/7. Not one person, they have rotating shifts. But they have these rotating shifts, and the idea is they fill the temple with the praises of God. If you walk through the golden doors, you hear the praises of God. Day or night, no matter what hour it is, you will hear the praises of God resounding on the glass, on the golden glass walls. You will hear them echo with the praises of God because these Levites sing and sing and sing. By the way, if you're singing all the time, do you have any time to like plant a garden? Tend sheep? Raise chickens? These guys can't eat. These guys are singing around the clock in the temple, filling the place with the sounds of God's praises. They can't eat. They have no way to provide for food. So there is in verse 23 a command from the king concerning them, a fixed provision for the singers as every day required. Uzi the son of Bani lives in Jerusalem to administrate the food, to make sure that these hungry singers get fed. He lives there to make sure that the king's food that is going to the singers gets there. So too in verse 24, that's important because then in verse 24, Pethahiah the son of Mishezabel is at the king's side in Susa. So he doesn't live in Jerusalem. Nehemiah, your whole point is these people live in Jerusalem. Why are you recording a guy who doesn't live in Jerusalem? Because he lives in Susa, constantly seeking the welfare of Jerusalem. His heart and his mind, though he live in Susa, is bent always for the good of the church. His passion is for the well-being of those singers, for the well-being of the work of the church. He is in Susa at the king's side so that he might turn the king's heart toward the church. What a great picture. Here they are. These are the people who live in Jerusalem. People with a passion for her safety and purity. People with a passion for her worship and assembly. People with a passion for the care and compassion for the poor, the needy. People who have a passion to guard and keep the gates, who have then the administrative responsibilities to move food about, to advise the king. These are the ones who live in the church, who give their waking hours, who give their energy, time, and talent, and passion to the church. They work and work and work. They shed their tears and their blood for the work of the church. But now we have this great question. Why? Why? I've raised this standard up, or rather Nehemiah has. How about you? Are you this passionate for the worship of God? For the care of the poor and the needy? For the safety of the souls of those around you? Are you this passionate for the church of Jesus Christ? Why should you be? In the rest of our chapter, it lists off the villages. And it sets before us a unique challenge. The sons of Judah and of Benjamin live in these villages around Jerusalem. And all of the villages listed off there for the sons of Judah are south of Jerusalem. And all of the villages listed off for the sons of Benjamin are north of Jerusalem. It's their inheritance. They are back on the farms their grandfathers grew. They are back in the houses their great-great-grandparents built. They are living in their family's ancestral inheritance. They have re-inherited the promised land. They have re-established their claim on the promised land. And I wonder, dear saints, what would possess these people to give up their inheritance to live in Jerusalem? What would motivate the human heart so much to say, I would give up my home that's been in my family for generations. I would give up the land that I just got back after not having it for 70 years. Why would they give this up to move to Jerusalem? Who would do this? In verse 2, it said that they blessed those who went willingly. There were those who welcomed this call. God said to them, give up your family inheritance. God said, give up your ancestral home. God said, give up every claim you have to a piece of dirt and stick in this earth and go live in my city and do my work. Why would they go? I've already answered the question. It's the word my. In verse 1 and verse 18, Jerusalem is described as the holy city. What makes Jerusalem holy? The holy God lives there. It is His home. We sang in Psalm 132, I have chosen Zion, there I desire to be. Why do these people hunger and thirst to live in Jerusalem? Because God hungers and thirsts to live in Jerusalem. Why does my heart beat with passion to be here in the worship of God? Because God is here in the worship of God. Why do I ache and yearn to love and care for the poor and the needy? Because God is there caring for the poor and the needy. Why do I yearn for the safety and the security of your souls? Because God does. Because He weeps over the conditions of your souls. Why should I give every time and talent I have? Why should I spend all of this passion and energy on the work of the church? Because Jesus gave more for the work of the church. Why should I keep the gates of the church? Because Jesus died for that. Why should I care for the souls of God's people? Because Jesus died for that. Why? Why should I care for the poor and the needy? Because Jesus died for that. Why should we have this passion for the church of Jesus Christ? For His people, His worship. Because Jesus died for that. This is Nehemiah 11. The church is God's house. He lives in Jerusalem. It is His holy city. Dear saints, you are not your own. You are not your own. And your talents are not yours. And your time is not yours. And your children are not yours. No, you were bought with a price. And this church belongs to Him. That's the beauty. That's the beauty. God dwells here. Why wouldn't you want to be here? God dwells in these praises. Why don't you want to sing? God dwells in the love and the poor to the needy. Why don't you want to give? That's where the love of God is. That's where the work of Jesus Christ is already at play. Why are our hearts not burning to join Jesus in this work? Dear saints, the church is God's house. Live in it. Live there. Dwell there. Don't make this a weekend home. But Monday through Saturday, give yourself to the work and the people of the church. Dwell with them and love them. The church is God's house. Live in your church. Let's pray together. Our great God and Father, we thank You for Your love. The love that sent Jesus Christ from the realms of glory. Your love which established the heavens and the earth and all that is in them. Your love that raised up Your Son and crucified Him. Your love which raised Him from the dead and seated Him on high in power. Oh, we thank You for Your love that has made us who were once not loved, loved. Who made us who were once not a people, a people. Your people. Oh, Father, we praise You and bless Your name today for Your great love. Teach us to love, O God. Teach us to love as Christ has loved us. For this we pray in His holy name. Amen. Turn down your Psalters to Psalm 84, Selection B. Psalm 84, Selection B. There's a beauty in this Psalm, 84b. It speaks about how we want God to look at us and to see on our shield the face of His anointed. The image is this: look at me and see Jesus. Look at Noah, but see Jesus. But then there's this other great image. I'd rather stand near my God's house than dwell in tents of wickedness. Is that our heart? Can we sing that honestly and purely? Can we sing that passionately and truly? I would rather stand in the rain and the snow next to the house of God than be warm and well fed in tents of wickedness. Because wherever God dwells, there I want to dwell. Psalm 84b, let's make it our prayer.